The Relevant Radio Studio Line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans available at relevantradio.com/forester.
Get a 360-degree look at all the news and issues of the day right now. This is the Drew Mariani Show, getting you connected on Relevant Radio.
All right, here's a question for you. How are you sleeping at night, huh? Sleeping through the night? Do you have problems falling asleep? Do you have problems maybe staying asleep? Maybe you have no problem falling asleep. Maybe you're waking up in the middle of the night and you're like, I am wide awake and I can't get back to sleep. Right? What do you do in situations like that? I know a lot of people turn to melatonin or valerian. Some people take sleep aids. There's lots of different things people do to try to control their sleep. Have you ever tried prayer? Huh? Interesting. Huh? Here in the United States, I saw a great article earlier today, and I reached out to Dr. Andrew Newberg, who's going to be stopping by the studio, and I got him on short notice. And I love when he's on. He's been on the program in the past with me. He's done stuff on near-death experiences. He wrote a book on how God changes your brain. You might want to check that out, too. How God Changes Your Brain is one of his books, and I'll be stopping by in a second. But I can't tell you how many people I know have trouble sleeping. Here in the States, large portions of the populations they don't get the sleep we need. Maybe they say you need, 7-8 hours, something like that? A lot of people get a lot less. According to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the average American, and see how you fare with this, how much sleep do you get? The average American gets about 6.8 hours of sleep a night. And that is actually a full hour less than what it used to be. If you go back in history, back in 1942, people slept, an hour longer than that. 59% of Americans, they get 7 or more hours of sleep a night, while about 40% get less than that. But 1 in 4 people, check this stat out. 1 in 4 people ages 18 to 24 say they don't sleep well because of technology. Well, that makes sense, right? You have your tablet, your phone, your TV, your laptop in front of you. As a parent, maybe get your kids formed well. Establish some good habits for sleep. Maybe share these studies with them. 1 in 4 kids, 18 to 24, I could sleep at the drop of a hat when I was 18 and sleep long, too. But the kids saying, hey, technology is affecting it. Here's something else that I found really interesting. If you're sleep deprived and you are making business related decisions, that increases the expectation of gains and decreases the estimation of possible losses, they say. So the question is, how do you help yourself get to sleep? Obvious factors, go to bed at the same time, make sure your room's dark, eat healthy, turn off the computer, don't have alcohol before bed. There's lots of little strategies that they'll give you. But what happens if you're lying awake in bed? A study published last year in the Sleep Health, found that people who have higher levels of religious involvement, they tend to sleep better than their less religious counterparts. And of course, we all know people who say they can't sleep. If I wake up in the middle of the night for some reason, I'll tell you, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but for me, the insomniac's cure is the rosary. If I start saying the rosary, it is a battle to get through the first decade. I'm back out again. And I don't know whether it's the repetitiveness of the prayer. And I try to meditate on what I'm praying, but soon. And I often ask the Lord, help me. I ask Our Lady to rock me to sleep. And I pray that rosary and I'm out. So try that. Try the rosary. Try the chaplet. Try both. And I think you might find it works. I'm joined right now by somebody who knows this issue intimately. Dr. Andrew Newberg is the director of research at the Murdo Brin Center for Integrative Medicine at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital and Medical College. And as I said before, he's the author of a lot of different books. One of the books I think would be a great read for is How God Changes Your Brain. And you can learn more about him at AndrewNewberg.com, N-E-W-B-E-R-G. He's board certified in internal medicine and nuclear medicine. And he's back once again. Doctor, thanks for your time. Thanks for joining me on short notice.
Thanks for having me on the program again.
Always good. A lot of people struggle with sleep. Your study, you've been studying the impact of religion on the brain, and that's why I thought, hey, let's talk to you about it. What about sleep? Why would practicing religion, even outside of just praying the rosary when you're awake, why would the practice of religion help some people sleep better?
Well, I think it's probably multifactorial, as everything that has to do with sleep is. I think, you know, part of it you sort of mentioned, I mean, a lot of times people are just worrying about things, dealing with things. And a lot of the research has shown that those people who are more religious tend to have lower levels of anxiety and depression. Both of those kinds of symptoms are associated with poor sleep. So just feeling a little bit better, feeling a little bit more confident, as you said, you know, praying towards to God to help with the process of going to sleep. I mean, all of those things can help to kind of mitigate that sense of anxiety or that feeling, which is often a cause of problems with sleep. Right. You're up thinking about, you know, what you got to do at work or a problem with a relationship or something like that. And if you can feel comforted by your religious beliefs, then that can help to make you feel a little bit better, reduce your anxiety, and help a person fall asleep a little bit easier. So that's one factor. You know, on a more direct level, you mentioning something like doing the rosary, a lot of practices like prayer, various meditation types of practices, what they do is that as part of the process, as you get into it, as you do the particular practice itself, there is this kind of slow rhythmicity to it. And that actually helps to stimulate what's called the parasympathetic nervous system, which is I sometimes refer to as the quiescent system of our body. And that basically helps our body to relax. It slows our heart rate down. It reduces our blood pressure. Oh. It gets us relaxed. It helps to rejuvenate our energy. And when you sleep, you want that parasympathetic system to turn on to get you relaxed. And in fact, when we're anxious, the opposite part of our autonomic nervous system, what's called the sympathetic nervous system or the arousal system, that kicks on. And that's what gets us awake and alert and ready to do things. You know, you want that to happen when you are doing certain types of things, you know, when you're getting ready to deal with something at work or to give a talk or whatever you're going to do. You know, you want your stress response in your body to turn on so that you can accomplish what it is that you need to accomplish. But you don't want it on when you are trying to fall asleep. And under normal circumstances, usually when one part of that autonomic nervous system, the arousal or the quiescent side, is on, the other one shuts down. But sometimes, like I said, if the calming side is supposed to be on when you're trying to go to sleep and the arousing side comes into play because you're anxious or you're thinking about things, then doing a practice that helps to bring back that calming system of the body and the brain is something that actually can be very beneficial. And people have found that a variety of different meditative prayer types of practices can help to get people calm back down, allow them to ultimately fall back to sleep. So it certainly makes a lot of sense that people can engage their religious or spiritual beliefs and or practices in a way that can help them to improve their overall sleep and help them even to get to sleep or to stay asleep if they wake up in the middle of the night.
That's awesome. My guest today is Dr. Andrew Neuberg. If you want to join us, I only have him for a few moments today. You can dial in with your question, your comment, your thought. Our number here is 888-914-9149. Feel free to use it. Pull up a chair and join the conversation at 888-914-9149. I often think about quality versus quantity. Is the quality of sleep impacted by our practice of faith versus the quantity of sleep, or does it really matter? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I my guess is that there really hasn't been a clear study that has been able to demonstrate that. Certainly there is something to be said for quality of sleep because we go through different stages of sleep throughout the night. You know, people know of some of them like REM sleep. They always hear of the rapid eye movement sleep is what that stands for. And that's an important part of our sleep cycles to help us to kind of rejuvenate our brain. In fact, it's actually kind of an interesting question as to why do we even need sleep at all? Basically, you'll die if you don't sleep for you know, a prolonged period of time. If you keep somebody awake without any sleep for a week or so, it pretty much leads to death. So there's something very restorative about sleep. And of course, if you can engage kind of a full level of cycle of sleep and get all the way to the REM sleep, then that is going to be the best and most restful kind of sleep. And again, I mean, I think where one would see the value of a practice like prayer is to be able to help a person relax, to be able to help the person's brain get into these kind of calmer states. And the goal would hopefully be to keep that person asleep, allow them to go through all the different stages of sleep that they need, and to make that as healthful and as restful a sleep as possible.
Yeah, sleep deprivation is a torture. I mean, that's for sure. It's amazing you can actually die from it. But I know that certain militaries have used it in the past, and I just know what I'm like without any sleep. It's brutal. A lot of people say
there's some very interesting studies that have been done to look at that, because people, you know, at about 24 hours of sleep deprivation, there's a group of people who handle that pretty well. A lot of doctors obviously try to handle that pretty well, especially when you're a resident. But then there's other people who are not doing too well at 24 hours of sleep deprivation. And then by about 3 days of sleep deprivation, pretty much everyone's a mess. And so it's certainly very problematic when people are not getting good sleep.
I've never understood that, though. I mean, in terms of residency, right? I have several friends who are physicians, right? I'm like, why would you put, I mean, because it seems like you're compromising the care of the patient by putting a residency on where they get no sleep. You know, they got to grab a couple hours in some room somewhere. But I mean, fundamentally, I mean, why do you torture, you know, future doctors like that in the residency program?
Well, it's actually been something that's been pretty aggressively addressed in the context of medical training, and they have realized that it isn't good and is not good for patient care. And so many programs these days have certain limitations or certain requirements to make sure that people do get adequate sleep. Yeah. And that they can't be up for too long of a time without getting some sleep. So that has been something that has been recognized over the last 20 years or so. And there have been a lot of changes to residency programs to make sure that's not as big of a problem as it used to be.
Let's grab a call for you. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. My guest, Dr. Andrew Newberg. And Catherine is listening in New Jersey. Hi, Catherine. Welcome.
Hi, Drew. Hi, Doctor.
Hey.
Drew, I love your show.
Thanks.
This is a great topic. My husband, who I just called and told him to tune in, my husband has a terrible time with his sleep. We go to bed around 9 or 10. I passed right out. When he goes to sleep, he consistently wakes up at around 2 or 3, and he has a terrible time getting back to sleep. And he'll maybe get back to sleep finally around 5 or 6, and then, of course, he has to get up at 7.
Wow.
And I'm wondering, as does he, is he someone who only needs maybe 5 hours sleep? Or is this indicative of a problem? It's pretty chronic. It's pretty much every night.
Yeah.
Now, he doesn't help himself because I see he gets on his phone and starts reading news sites.
Mm-hmm.
But my broader question is, why does he wake up consistently after having been asleep for only 5 hours?
All right. Doctor, you want to handle it?
Well, she actually raises some really important points, something that I did want to address with all the listeners. So, I mean, you know, taking a big step back, whenever somebody has trouble with sleep, it really is important to talk to a doctor, because there are some specific issues that can occur. And, you know, some of the more well-known ones, things like sleep apnea. It's important that gets evaluated by people, because basically what's happening is that you stop breathing during sleep, and sometimes maybe you only wake up once or twice during the night because that's what you remember, but your overall sleep is extremely disrupted because you have lots of little awakenings, and there are ways of easily testing for that. And so if you do have somebody who has kind of a chronic issue, you know, especially if they have things like snoring and stuff like that, then it is important to make sure that they kind of follow up and make sure that there isn't something that is treatable, because actually sleep apnea is a risk factor for heart disease and stroke and other things like that. So it is important to get checked out just to make sure that there aren't other issues going on. Now, you know, something like your husband, there's a lot of reasons why people wind up not sleeping well. And as you mentioned, part of the problem is that if he wakes up and he is looking at a screen, there's certainly evidence that the light of the screen actually kind of does the reverse. It actually keeps us up. So, you know, turning to the topic today, doing something like a meditation or a prayer practice or reading a book that doesn't have that kind of light that's emitted by the tablet or the telephone is probably a better kind of thing to do than to look at those kinds of electronic devices. So, and sometimes whether it's listening to music or using certain rhythmic interventions, they can, you know, all potentially be helpful. Sometimes you have to try different things, even in the context of prayer. You know, maybe doing the rosary works great for some people, but not for others. Maybe just having a conversational prayer with God could be better. And there's some very formal types of meditation that might be more useful as well that people could try. And one other thing that sometimes happens with people, that especially when they wake up in the middle of the night, in addition to also making sure that there aren't a lot of stressors in a person's life that might be keeping them up and how you manage those, sometimes it has to do with our body's energy systems. And sometimes what happens is that when your glucose level, your sugar level gets very low after, you know, you haven't eaten for a number of hours, that actually causes that sympathetic, that arousal system to kick on and says, I got to eat. Wow. And so, you know, I don't know if he gets hungry or whatever, but sometimes that could be part of the process and making sure that a person has some high protein snack or something like that before they go to bed that kind of sustains them through the night. Sometimes that can be helpful too, but it sort of depends on the exact circumstances.
Well, Catherine, thanks. I appreciate the call.
Good question.
Let me ask you too, just about what happens as you get older. I know, do you need less sleep as you get older? I mean, when you're 18 to 24, you know, those kids are in high school, for example, they can sleep 16 hours a day. And yet, you know, older people, they don't seem to need as much sleep. So does that change as you get older? What happens to the body as you get older that makes somebody wake up in the middle of the night and not be able to fall back to sleep?
Well, yes. I mean, certainly as people get older, they typically need, you know, less sleep than when they were younger. But usually not, you know, overly dramatically. And so if people are only, you know, it's not talking about having, you know, 3 or 4 hours of sleep. I mean, that's going to be problematic. And again, research has shown that people who are really not getting enough sleep are at risk for a variety of problems. And especially as people get older, perhaps even developing things like Alzheimer's disease. There's some evidence that sleep and sleep disturbances are part of the process that leads to cognitive decline in people as they get particularly older. It's not quite sure whether, you know, the sleep disturbance is causing the cognitive problems or the cognitive problems cause the sleep issues or some kind of reciprocal interaction there. But you know, anytime, again, that people are having trouble with sleep, it is important to get that evaluated to make sure that there aren't other issues going on. But it's a challenging issue. It's difficult because it's hard to just tell yourself, you know, go to sleep. And so there are problems with doing that. And of course, even taking sleep medications, which can be helpful in the right context, you know, sometimes they don't lead to the kind of healthful sleep that you ideally would like. So there's always kind of pros and cons to every approach that people may take.
All right, Diana is listening in California. She has an interesting question for you. Hi, Diana.
Hi. My husband sleeps a lot. I mean, he doesn't, it's not like he sleeps 12 hours a day, but I mean, he'll go to bed at 11:30, say, and then wake up at 8, and then he might even take a nap during the day. And I was just wondering, I mean, that's a lot more than sleep than I need. And I mean, he's a couple of years older than me, but we're in our 50s. I just wondered if that was some kind of, you know, if it meant something.
Yeah. So is there a problem with sleeping too much? Can you oversleep?
Well, there can, you know, again, too much of, you know, or too little can ultimately be a problem. I think, you know, to some degree, an answer actually to both of the callers' questions about the amount of sleep that people are getting, it's also important to know how the person actually feels. So if a person feels well rested and feels, you know, very functional and feels like they're able to do everything that they need to do, then they probably are getting enough sleep. So even if it's someone who's getting a little bit less sleep, like the first caller, if they wake up and they're ready to do everything and they can do everything that they need to do, then they probably are getting enough of the sleep that they need. If they do feel tired, if they feel that they can't think as well, then that could be a problem. You know, too much sleep, again, could be completely normal, but sometimes it is helpful to know, you know, how restful the person feels. If they are able to do all the things that they need to do, there can be reasons why people develop a higher need for sleep. Are they overly fatigued? Then you start worrying about there's multiple types of causes for being overly tired and not having enough energy, and it could be nutritional. It could be, and there could be infections. There could be, you know, it could have something to do with depression and things like that. So there's a lot of possible causes why people wind up having too much sleep. But again, you know, it sounds like from what the last caller just was asking about, that amount of sleep in and of itself isn't really a problem. It's sort of a matter of how the person is doing with it and how functional they feel they are.
Right. Well, Doctor, I have to take a short pause. When we come back, I want to pick up on how God changes the brain. I know you wrote a book on that very subject, and I'd love to get your take on it. My guest today, Dr. Andrew Newberg, taking a look at prayer, how it affects sleep. your sleep and how God affects the brain. Stay with us. Our conversation continues right after this.
Your voice matters. Call in now at 888-914-9149 to tell Drew what you think. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Keeping you better informed, educated, and inspired. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, about 4 minutes before the top of the hour. It's good to be here with you. I'm telling you, I always like to give you a look at life you're not going to find anywhere else. I'm speaking this afternoon with Dr. Andrew Newberg. He wrote a book. In fact, several of them. I've had him on the broadcast in the past talking about near-death experiences. And I saw an article on prayer and sleep earlier today, so we reached out to have him come by. He also wrote a book on how God changes your brain. And if you want to check it out, all major bookstores, but you can also go to his website. It's andrewnewberg.com. And you can read about a lot of the stuff we're talking about there as well. So, Doc, before time ticks away here, I do want to talk a little bit about how God changes the brain. What happens when we're in a relationship with God? And how does our brain differ from somebody who maybe is not in that same relationship?
Well, I think the most important kind of general statement of all the research that we've done, and we've done scans of people who have engaged in all types of religious and spiritual practices and different kinds of experiences, is that there isn't just one part of the brain that is a kind of, you know, the religious part. There's not, like when you walk into church, there isn't one part of your brain that lights up and says, okay, it's time to be religious. There are many different parts of the brain. In fact, it may actually be the entire brain that gets involved. It depends a little bit on exactly what a person is doing, what they're thinking, what they're feeling. And to me, it makes so much sense to say it's the entire brain, because when you do look at what we do when people are religious, they have emotions about that. They have thoughts and feelings. They have beliefs. They have experiences. They see things. They hear things that are all part of the religious experience that they have. And so all of these different parts of the brain become involved. And, of course, I work in an integrative medicine center. We understand that the brain and the body are intimately connected. So to me, maybe the simplest answer is that if there is a religious part of ourselves, it's really all of us. It's the whole thing of who we are. It's all the different parts of our brain and how that our brain is connected to our body. And there are a lot of changes that go on in the brain when a person does engage their religious or spiritual self in terms of a practice like prayer. Different parts of our brain turn on and off, being in church, feeling connected to God. All of these are experiences and aspects of that relationship that we have in the context of religion that has actually a very profound effect on how our brain works.
It's amazing. I remember seeing an MRI or some study done on the brain when a person prayed the rosary and what happened to the brain. It was pretty amazing, the areas that lit up. I only have a couple seconds left. Doctor, thank you for your time. And the book is How God Changes Your Brain. You can check it out at andrewnewberg.com. Look forward to talking to you next. You're working on a new book?
We are. We're working on a book that's looking at the varieties of religious and spiritual experiences, taking, as people remember, the famous book by William James back in around 1900, looking at the last 100 years of research on the topic and what that tells us about who we are as religious and spiritual beings.
I can't wait till that's out. That'll be a great conversation. Doctor, thanks for making time for me today. It's always good talking with you.
Good talking with you, too. Thank you.
Right, that's Dr. Andrew Newberg. Check him out, andrewnewberg.com. Your news and headlines are straight ahead. I'm back on the other side.